The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
All right, everybody. Good morning. How we doing? It is Thursday, 20th of January, a day that just has a kind of a nice ring to it. Every fourth one of these is an inauguration day. Oh, how I wish the next one were closer than it is, but you know something. And by the way, I don't want time to fly. It's weird. I wish it were January 20th of 2025, like tomorrow, because the Biden presidency, or Harris, whoever's president by then, will come to an end if we play our cards properly and fight hard and fight smart. But I don't, it's weird. I'm 64. I've got two adult kids. Regina's 30, which is shocking, and Ethan is 18. He'll be 19 here in a couple of months. Are you kidding? I want to cherish every year, cherish every day, even if it means slogging through the slime pit that is the Biden presidency. We're going to do this every day, and I'm just going to tell you, it is going to go quickly. We are 3 years from today. 3 years from today, we will install a better president. I am absolutely confident of that. Oh, no, by the way, as 65 looms as a kind of a retirement year for some people. Yeah, I don't know when you're getting rid of me. Are you kidding me? I will be along for the election of 2024 and probably looking to stick around for a good portion of history after that to see how it all goes. This is a fascinating moment to pivot. I hope this is part of our charm. I've got Biden lowlights from yesterday, and you've heard a lot of commentary from last night and this morning about the dreadful things Biden did, telegraphing to Russia that we're probably okay with a minor incursion without slapping too serious a consequence on you. The just inexplicable. It's totally explicable. Insult to his political opponents as racists, Bull Connor, the worst of the images of the 1950s South. If you dare to interfere with the Democrat fetish for nationalizing our elections in total violation of the Constitution, which dictates that the states will determine the manner and methodology of how elections are held. Just various other things, the denial. Whether it's policy denial, hey, inflation's not so bad, things are going great. Name another president who's done as much as I have. Do you really want me to do that, sir? And by the way, the problem with Biden is not that he has that he's done so little. The problem with Biden is that the things that he has done are dreadful. So but the good news overnight, even with Biden as president, Democrats running the House, Democrats running the Senate, we're still stopping them left and right on all kinds of things. Build back broke, dead. Federalization, nationalization, hijacking of election procedures, dead. So I will tell you, thank you, Joe Manchin. Thank you, Kyrsten Sinema. And they are catching holy you know what. That's kind of funny. I mean, are they going to get primaried now? And I don't know if Manchin necessarily runs again. Sinema surely will. In Arizona. And these are both kind of purple states. West Virginia is not even, I mean, West Virginia is kind of a red state, actually. But you got a lot of United Mine Workers, labor activism there, and a lot of just reflex Democrat voting going on. I know. That's where I started my whole broadcast career those many years ago. Great state of West Virginia. Love it, love it, love it. Arizona, total purple state. So it's an interesting time to be alive. It's a challenging time to be alive. It's a crazy time to be alive. But you know what? We are. We are, and I'm grateful every day, and we'll chronicle stuff as the days and months and years past. But here's the curveball we've been thrown, and I'm kind of fascinated by it. Glad to see if, you know, I'll tell you what everybody's talking about and play a little something for you and see if you want to weigh in on this. And if you do, we can toss this around for a little bit. Otherwise, we'll dive into some more Biden aftermath or other things going on in the news. Again, Attorney General Ken Paxton, a big honking case of COVID, so he's down for a few days. George P. on the show tomorrow at 8:35. One of the first things I'll ask him is he's given Paxton grief for suing the big blue Texas city school districts for flouting Governor Abbott's ban on mask mandates. So it's okay. Well, what would you do? What would you have done differently? Why was that a bad thing? My personal thought, and I'm always looking to be proven wrong. I am always open to evidence that something I say or something I believe is just not true or just not true anymore, because that's how I learn. All right. My belief right now. So here's a test right here. Conservatives listening right now. Awesome or not awesome that Paxton sued the living daylights out of Houston, Dallas, Austin, El Paso, school districts that have flown in the face of the Abbott ban on mask mandates. I think that is enormously popular in conservative circles. That I don't think there's a conservative I can find that views that as somehow a terrible burden on our school districts. Hey, guess what? You don't want to get sued by your own state? Obey the law. Don't go out there and go rogue when Abbott does something Abbott has the total power to do, and that's say no to your school mask mandate. I think it's on the long list of stuff that Paxton's doing that most conservatives think are awesome. So the job, if you're George P. or Louie Gohmert or Ava Guzman, the people running against him, is to somehow taint his record, to say that he's doing things that are bad. Okay, well, I'll let George P. make that case tomorrow, 8:35. We'll see how that goes. Speaking of primaries, you ready to hop into one, congressionally speaking? Before I even get to Crenshaw, 3rd District, the great, the legendary, the magnificent, so proud friend of mine. I love this man. I remember him. I miss him. I love him. Sam Johnson, 3rd District, some northern Dallas County, a lot of Collin County. And he passed away, and that seat, nobody replaces Sam Johnson, but inheriting that is Van Taylor, who had been in the Texas House and the Texas Senate. We've known Van for a long time. And so he's coming up for his 3rd time. So 2018, 2020, now here comes 2022. And Van is getting primaried. And among the people primarying him is longtime Collin County Judge Keith Self, who's also been a longtime friend of mine. Keith's on the show at 8:35. And you know the Mark Davis rule of primaries. It ain't about whether you're awesome or how many cool ideas you have. It's, can you make the argument that the incumbent needs to be fired? So that's what Keith will get the chance to do at 8:35. He will join us, and others may follow. And, of course, Van's going to be on the show at some point very soon as well, because their job, of course, is to make the case, hey, keep me. I do not deserve to be fired. I deserve to be kept. So Dan Crenshaw has primary opposition down there in Texas' 2nd congressional district, which loops curiously across the northern suburbs of Houston. And people are on Dan's back about a couple of things, and Mike pointed them out. So let me, okay, can I do this now? Yes, here we go. In, golly, almost 2 years, in March of 2020, Crenshaw's on a podcast and talks about he's just riffing on stuff. And I like when people do that, when they're just kind of, you know, shooting from the hip about various things. You learn something about people that way. Yeah. Well, the Crenshaw quote was about having hero archetypes. An archetype is like a typical example, a prime example, here's one of the best examples of, okay, in this case, heroes, heroism. And he had some examples. All right, so follow along. He said, quote, Jesus is a hero archetype. Superman is a hero archetype. Now, wait for it. So, but if you pause right there, it's like, he's comparing Jesus to Superman. No, he's not. No, he's not. Jesus, obviously, maybe the best hero archetype ever. Superman is from the culture. He's fictitious, but, you know, embody, you know, truth, justice, the American way. Remember when you used to be able to say that? That's something we have as a cultural hero archetype. And then he said, real characters, too. I could name 1,000. Rosa Parks, Ronald Reagan. All right. If you're wanting to be snotty to Dan, there are two things you could say. You're comparing Jesus to Superman, which he was not. And the other thing is real characters, too. Well, Superman's not real. Jesus is. It's like, you're not saying Jesus. You're saying Jesus is not real. No, he did not. No, he did not. So somebody wanted to give him some grief about this. Happened to be apparently a 10-year-old girl. Maybe we don't need to have, you know, fourth graders asking questions at tea party. I mean, unless they're, you know, cute or whatever. I mean, I love kids and sure, give them the mic every once in a while. But this young lady apparently wanted to give Dan some grief about that. And doggone it, man, Dan just didn't handle it.
Yeah.
The most important thing here is that we have important hero archetypes that we look up to. Jesus is a hero archetype. Superman is a hero archetype. Real characters, too. I could name a thousand. Rosa Parks, Ronald Reagan, end quote. I can't wrap my head around this.
So there's a 10-year-old saying, I can't wrap my head around this. A really young lady? Anyway, though, I think I gave you about a minute or so of decent explanation there. Here's Dan.
I'll help you. Put a period after the word Jesus and don't question my faith.
Wow.
Way to go, guy. You moron.
Look.
Yeah, you don't talk
to a kid like that.
Don't question my faith.
So here's the audience just finding it a little untoward that Dan would get so aggressive toward a fourth grader. And you know what? The crowd's right.
You guys can ask questions about all of these things, and I will answer them. But don't question my faith.
I can question your faith if this is what you said.
I mean, you can read the quote again. But nowhere in that quote am I saying Jesus is not real. That's a ridiculous statement. Of course he's the Son of God. Of course he's the Son of God, and of course he's real.
You can't say two different things. You can say that on a podcast, and you can say this here.
On the podcast, nobody would have understood it that way. I think you're twisting it that way. Which is not very Christian. Which is not very Christian.
Let's go, Brandon. Let's go, Brandon.
Isn't that Dan kind of going after the young lady's faith right there? Oh, this is not a good Crenshaw moment.
It's not. And I'm not going to have my faith question.
Okay, dude, enough. Golly. I mean, I know it's easy to, you know, jump into the time tunnel and come back and go, okay, here's what you should have done. She says, okay, young lady, first of all, thank you. Appreciate your question. But in no way am I comparing Jesus to Superman. And having invoked Superman, I also talked about some real people. Superman's not real. Jesus is, but then went to Rosa Parks, Ronald Reagan. Next question. Boom! There you go. Now, as for Crenshaw and Cheney, I'm looking, you help me out. Has he had anything to say in defense of Liz Cheney in the last 6 to 9 months? If you get better, if you learn something, that's good. But I will tell you, and this may be a question our friend Van Taylor has to answer, because he was all about this January 6th committee as well. He wasn't in big, you know, full-time praise of Liz Cheney, but he thought, horribly unwisely, that this would be just a way for us to focus on what Nancy Pelosi knew or what she didn't know. No. And I told him so. It was a bad moment for Van Taylor. Has he had many bad moments? Not that I can count. So much so that people are looking to fire him? I ain't seeing it. Maybe Keith Self sees differently because he's primarying him. We'll see him at 8:35. We are in, let's see. We're in Plano. Lori, Mark Davis, welcome.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
Hi.
I'm calling about the Paxton suing the school districts over the mask mandate.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have to remind everyone that back in March of 2021, ESSER III funding was voted in by Biden, was signed into law, so that school districts received multi-tens of millions of dollars in order to help the schools stay open or reopen under COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that is that buried in that funding was the requirement that those school districts follow CDC guidelines when it comes to masking, and also that at some point the school districts have to provide an opportunity for children to be vaxxed at schools. And you can find this in the fine print on the district's websites where they talk about all they've done with this funding. And I know Plano alone has received $43 million under ESSER III funds. And it's incredible, the amount of money. So there is it was a state federal issue going on with the money.
And it's so always about the money. And maybe, listen, there are all kinds of districts who are saying, listen, and you know what? You know what would have helped their cases if a Dallas, a Houston, an El Paso said, listen, we don't want to do the mask mandate. We don't want to flout the governor here. But we want to we got to do this in order to get the money. They didn't say that. They absolutely love the mask mandate, and that's why they did it. In Sunnyvale, James, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. Hi. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey, I just want to kind of talk about Dan Crenshaw a little bit. I think kind of give him a little bit light, easier pass over there because one, I don't think he even actually answered Tim Roll's question. She asked. She was asking him directly about how he reconciles saying one thing and another and one and then kind of saying it a different.
But he didn't say anything differently in Montgomery County. It's not any different. Did Dan handle that well? He did not. But it's a snotty question. It's the kind of thing that somebody asks if they're trying to start a fight. I don't think the little girl made it up, but she was parroting it. But listen, she's 10. You handle that better. And listen, by and large, every single bit of this is absolute BS. It's absolute nonsense. Here's what you judge Dan Crenshaw on. Voting record. Voting record. Is there anything? And if everybody wants to climb all over Dan Crenshaw's back, find me something that he's voted for. Something. Listen, if he did, you know, I'm going to paste him for even momentarily of having good things to say about Liz Cheney after Trump ate her brain. That's totally fair. But I think he has gotten better about that. Is there any? As far as Crenshaw is concerned, my interest in his value is what he brings to the table ideologically, what his voting is, and not ticky tack stuff like this.
Well, I think that I am quite happy with a lot of this stuff and on his voting record as well too. I think he just has some glaring holes. I mean, for example, the SNL criticism or joking about his eye. I mean, he handled that amazingly. But
right. So literally, I mean, criminally late. Can you give me one thing right now that's a critic of Dan Crenshaw, a conservative critic of Dan Crenshaw would show to say there's a problem with his conservatism? One.
Yes. His being on the top list of Congress people to outrageously beat the S&P 500 on his personal investments.
That's the best you got?
Absolutely.
And I say that with respect. All righty, 828, appreciate it. Into the newsroom next. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. All right. In just a moment, into the third congressional district primary race, and former Collin County Judge Keith Self is going to join us. He's running against Van Taylor. And, boy, maybe some of the imagery will arise there of things you said about a year ago that you might want to phrase a little differently now. In the AG race, we got a lot going on. Ava Guzman apparently had a monster fundraising quarter. Ken Paxton still has the most money on hand. George P. is on with us tomorrow at 8:35, working our way through all of these races. And again, just sort of a policy statement that we'll hop into Gordon Griffin, come back out, talk to Keith, and then various other things on your mind at 866-660-5759. And that is that if you're gunning for somebody, make it about the idea. I mean, listen, it's possible for somebody to reveal some character flaw or some horrible communications misstep. Or absolutely. And if it's bad enough, can that be disqualifying? Sure, it has to be bad enough. Generally speaking, though, a lot of these things are style over substance. And the substance is in your voting record, your beliefs, the things you share. And therein lies your strength. And therein might lie some weaknesses. So that's what I will always focus on. So we'll talk to Keith here in a minute. I think some other people want to get back on to the Dan Crenshaw under the microscope exercise. So all this and more continues. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. Here's Gordon Griffin. Forty-one on this Thursday, 20th of January, 2022. Great to have you here. As you are guessing, here in the primary season, and are we inside 6 weeks? Whatever. To March 1st. March 1st will be here for you. You know it. And that's when the primaries answer the question, whom do Republicans want to carry the banner heading into November? Governor Abbott faces primary challenges. Ken Paxton faces primary challenges. Dan Crenshaw faces primary challenges. And here in DFW, all the big names, the folks we've been used to for a long, long time, others who have been in office for a somewhat lesser time, primary challenges are the rule of the road. And we are always pleased to work our way into those races and see what's going on. In Texas Congressional District 3, the incumbent is Van Taylor. Among those coming after him in the primaries, longtime Collin County judge and longtime personal friend of mine, Keith Self. Keith, welcome. How you doing, sir?
Mark, it's great to be on your show again. Let's get at it.
It is a pleasure to have you. Collin County Judge, 07 to 18. I know I've known you. I've been hanging out in rooms in Collin County, Denton County, Dallas County, all the counties. And at some point, I think of all the rooms I've been in. You and I have been standing in the same room with the same people for a long, long time. So take us prior to your Collin County Judge stint. A lot of military. Give us just the short bio, and we'll go from there.
Okay, I left Texas to go to West Point, graduated from West Point, and spent 10 years in the Airborne and the Special Forces, commanded one of those suitcase nuke detachments and Special Forces, got into the joint world, spent time in the Pentagon, the NATO military headquarters, U.S. European Command, embassy in Cairo, Egypt, and then when I got recalled to active duty for Afghanistan and Iraq, I spent time with the Central Command. So that's kind of a thumbnail sketch, Mark.
I want to say that a lot of my memories, even before you became Collin County Judge, involve you and me at a Collin County event, obviously in a room with a lot of other people. And I'm guessing Sam Johnson was in the room somewhere, a man we jointly revere and miss, an incredible American hero. And if memory serves, when he passed away, and I believe you considered running at that time for what would then be the vacancy, Van Taylor wound up ascending to that vacancy and is the congressman now. And now here you are saying, you know what, time for a change. So what made you decide to run in the primary against Van?
Well, I've been enjoying life for 3 years since I left office. But I tell you, I cannot continue to sit on the sidelines because Van has made some serious errors. And the first one is the January 6th vote that you very accurately called him out on May 20th and with your interview with him. That is a red line for many of the conservatives in Collin County. That's you can really stop right there with the people that we talk to.
In discussing this with Van at the time, and I guarantee you I will again, his belief, and it was shared by some, was that it's going to happen. It's worth going along with it, he said. Said, in order to have some Republican voices on that committee, asking some other questions, like what did Nancy Pelosi know? When did she know it? Why did the mayor of Washington and others turn down National Guard help, et cetera? There were some questions that he wanted the answers to. My reply to him was that those are good questions, but they're shouted down into a horrible well with his January 6th committee, which was just going to be a brutal anti-Trump dog and pony show. I don't know if he thinks better of that now. Do you think he still sticks by that? I'll ask him, but I'm asking you now.
Well, he portrayed himself. In fact, he called himself Mr. Bipartisan until this primary election. He's a member of the Problem Solvers Caucus. So he is definitely feeling the pressure. He's made some decisions that he's going to try to be a conservative now, but this is always the issue when people wander from their conservative roots and they start getting co-opted into the swamp and then they try to come back to their conservative roots. But I tell you, the January 6th vote is an anchor around his neck that I don't think he understands yet. It was a naive vote at best because in this environment, in this divisive environment in Congress, with Nancy Pelosi in charge, there was no way, regardless of the commission intent or rules setting it up, Pelosi was going to control it, and she did, and she wouldn't let some of those real conservatives on the commission at all. So it was naive at best, and we'll leave it at that, Mark.
Yeah, I think you're 100% correct about that. I don't think that I don't know. I'll ask him. I don't know if I go to it as evidence of lack of conservatism. However, you mentioned the Problem Solvers Caucus, and this, and I got to tell you, Keith, on his website, I keep talking to primary people. Say, listen, how awesome you are is great. Your track record is great. Here's the job one in a primary is explain why you've got to replace the person in office. And with that, you go to something Van is a member of called the Problem Solvers Caucus. This is some Republicans and some Democrats gathering together. They ostensibly say it's to see if we can find common ground, see if there are things we can agree on, et cetera, which sounds lovely. But I'm going to guess that you paint this as evidence of, well, let me not put words in your mouth. What's your thought on the Problem Solvers Caucus?
Well, I don't need to paint them as anything. They paint themselves as the Republicans. Let's not worry about the Democrats. They're Democrats. They're going to do what they do. The Republicans are the ones I worry about. These are the people that joined Van in his January 6th vote, that some of them voted to impeach President Trump. The entire caucus, I won't say the entire caucus, but the caucus supports the huge climate change bill. And if you remember back to the Republicans that put the Build Back Better bill over the top, the 12, I think it was 12 or 13, the majority of those are Problem Solvers Caucus members. So this shows ongoing relationship with these Republicans that definitely are not for a strong America in the ways that you and I understand it, Mark.
I think because I love when people, one of the problems is we no longer get together and talk about disagreements in a civil fashion. And to any extent that people want to do that, I think it's lovely. It becomes problematic if somebody is diving into a so-called Problem Solvers Caucus and co-opting views of Democrats. You mentioned climate. We're going to talk to Van about climate because, by the way, two things. You don't necessarily in the Problem Solvers Caucus have to agree with everything it does, nor do you necessarily bring to the table everything that some other member does as well. But I guess your point would be, you know, if you're going to be in a group, the reputation of that group is going to affix to you in some form.
Well, it definitely speaks to your point of view. He is a member of the Problem Solvers Caucus. I will not be. I will instead join the Freedom Caucus, those people that are standing, first of all, against the national debt and deficit. I intend to be a member of the Freedom Caucus.
Last question on Van, and then we'll actually talk about you. Is there anything actual vote-wise this session prior? Is there anything you say, this particular Van Taylor vote is something I find unacceptable, something voters should find unacceptable, an actual view he holds, a specific thing that you think is a disqualifier?
The January 6th vote is obviously the major one, but he also voted to take the statuary out of the Capitol. And I tell people that, in fact, I've had Republicans tell me, Mark, that they're all Democrats. Why are you complaining?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, that's our history. That's our history. We ought to learn from our history, not bury it. And I compare it to Germany, because Germany, the World War II museums that are owned by the German government are free for German citizens. Their worst period of history are free for German citizens. And we are doing right the opposite. We are not learning from our history. We're burying it. This is the progressive left narrative that we must destroy our Judeo-Christian faith, we must destroy our families, we must destroy our history in order for the federal government to be all-powerful.
So the stain of the January 6th vote, the stigma of being in the Problem Solvers Caucus, voting to get the Confederate folks out of the statuary, those things together, do you think that's enough to make the voters of District 3 fire Van Taylor?
There's one other that means a lot to a subset, and that is the fact that he moved his family to McLean, Virginia, lives in a large house there. And to Texans, we're very proud people. We like people who like Texas. We want people who are representing us to live among us, to know us, to shake our hand, to look us in the eye. And when you move your family to D.C. and then you visit Collin County and Hunt County now to simply visit and take photo ops. That's not what we want from our elected representatives.
I can hear people saying, man, if that you're, because I'll tell you, if you win, Keith, you're going to spend way more time in Washington than you do in Texas. You just are. And if someone says it's to be more around the family, we all love family, but it, again, not to put words in your mouth, it's like, you know what? You know that going in, you need to keep roots in the state. And if, you know, and if family separation is part of the job, then that's part of the job.
Exactly. You know, you may be in the wrong job if your family, if you have to have your family in D.C. with you, because the people here you represent, you just may be in the wrong job. I understand family's important. Absolutely, family's important. But if you must live with your family outside of Texas, then don't try to represent Texas.
The website is Keith Self, Keith, S-E-L-F, KeithSelf.com. Keith, appreciate you. Known you a long time, and a good health, good success on the campaign trail, and I know we'll talk again. Much appreciate the time today.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Take care. You bet. Keith Self in the primary, Texas Congressional District 3. It's 8:52. All right. So, this gets intriguing now. And we'll reach out to Van. It's about time for him to answer what some of the primary challenges are saying. So here's the bottom line. The Van Taylor Congressional District 3 voting record, its own self, pretty close to perfect. Now, when I say close, here's the thing. On like issue after issue, daily. Does he wish to? And I haven't talked to Van in a while. This is going to be important. Does he seek to distance and maybe even apologize for the ill wisdom of backing the January 6th committee? It would be a good idea for him to do so. I offer that as just as free advice. The Problem Solvers Caucus, is it a lovely way to get together with people and discuss things civilly, or is it evidence of the willingness to capitulate on stuff? I'll ask him about that. Getting the Confederate statues out of the Capitol, you can like or not like that. I don't know if that's a deal breaker. A bunch of Texas Republicans voted for that. Moving the family to Virginia, it might not be your favorite thing. It might, you know, you don't want to uproot the family. I don't know. Jeb Henseling got out of the 5th district because he just missed seeing the family. Something somebody does so you can keep the family together more. That's interesting. It's kind of a glass half full, glass half empty kind of thing. Let's do this. Let me wrap up this hour, hop into the 9 o'clock hour. We had Dan Crenshaw under the, and honestly, I would say about Van what I'd say about Dan Crenshaw. And I'd say about anybody. Some things are kind of window dressing. Some things are kind of stylistic. What's ultimately going to matter most is your actual votes on actual things. You know, that's now the January 6th committee. That's an actual thing. And the other thing I give people credit for is getting better after moments of not so great judgment a year ago. Give people room to grow, room to get better. Anyway, that's just me. Your thoughts welcome. And of course, that dreadful news conference from Biden last night. We've had a lot of other things on the griddle, so not a lot of opportunities to pay some attention to that. So we will, and other things in the news, and you may grab a line. 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 660 AM, the answer.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.